now on Racing Pulse, RSN's racing editor, Matt Stewart.
It means that the 2 months has been deemed null and void by the Supreme Court. Like Cranbourne, it's a very exciting potential for the next 5 to 10 years. So it's a rapidly growing training precinct.
For more news, opinion and selections, head to rsn.net.au.
Time to have a chat to RSN's racing editor, Matty Stewart. And, Matty, I'm excited about tonight's Newmarket meet in Tasmania. There's a couple of really nice horses racing down there. And Scott Brunton, who we know is a leading trainer in Tasmania, has a couple of big hopes as well. And I did see on social media a few questions because Scott Brunton has been found guilty of a charge down there, which he is fighting about allowance of him to continue training. So what's the situation there with Scott Brunton?
Yeah, he's got a stack of runners tonight, as he usually does, at their big night meeting at Launceston, including three or four in the Newmarket and some of his better-known horses. A week or so ago, Scott Brunton was found guilty of his fifth charge of presenting a horse with arsenic in its system at the races. And this goes back years where he just keeps having these recurring arsenic positives, and he's been fined and he was outed for 3 months. And he's launched an appeal, which means he gets an automatic stay of proceedings. And I noticed there was a few tweets saying, well, how come Scott Brunton's got competitors tonight because he's got 3 months? There is a 7-day window for a stay of proceedings when you lodge an appeal, and that's what he's done, and this falls within the 7 days. There was some report that it was 10 days, but it actually fits into the 7-day window for Scott Brunton, and that's what he's operating under tonight.
Okay, so that clarifies that situation as far as Scott Brunton is concerned. When does that appeal start? Do we know that?
No, I'm not sure. It's pending an appeal, so whenever the appeal is heard, I'm assuming it's imminent.
Okay. The All-Star Mile market's been out for just over a week now, and every time we talk to someone, it's basically heading towards the All-Star. When do the entries begin for All-Star Mile or close?
Entries close on Monday, and as we've been keeping tabs on in recent weeks, it seems like every good horse is aiming at the All-Star Mile. There's still this niggle that comes around pretty much annually now about the timing of the All-Star Mile and the Australian Cup. And I know that the VRC has pushed hard for the All-Star Mile to be run a fortnight before the Australian Cup, and the Australian Cup should be given a prize money increase, and that it just parlays better in a pattern sense. I've spoken to Danny O'Brien, Wayne Hawkes, Mike Moroney and Peter Moody this morning about the fact that the mile race is still being run a week after the Australian Cup over 2,000 metres, and Wayne Hawkes was particularly strong on it, saying there's just no logical reason in the world why the All-Star Mile comes before the Australian Cup. It's in March, it's run a week before the Australian Cup. O'Brien, Moody just said it just seems odd.
I thought this was an annual debate.
I did speak to Greg Carpenter this morning to say that it's one of those things that's under constant potential review, but at the moment the dates have been set. The VRC put in a prize money application last year and they were granted an increase for the Newmarket, but their application with the Australian Cup wasn't successful. It's worth $1.25 million compared to, what's it worth? $5, $6 million the All-Star Mile. I've lost track now. So the disparity between the two is alarming, and the timing of one before the other just doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. And there is a sense amongst other clubs and participants that the RV protection of the All-Star Mile, because it's a terrific race, let's face it, and it's been a great innovation, and the list of winners has been fantastic, but because they've got this sense of ownership that they created it, that they're very protective of it, and perhaps a byproduct of that is that the Australian Cup is going to continue to play second fiddle so long as it is run before the All-Star Mile and while the prize money disparity is there. So the fact that the entries are out on closing on Monday is just another reason why this has become a subject at the moment, and why there was a Flemington trainers meeting yesterday where it was very widely discussed, and there was almost a unanimous view amongst the Flemington trainers, at least, that this is just not an ideal situation, that after this year that the hope is that Racing Victoria will revisit it and maybe knock a few bob off the All-Star, pump a few bob into the Australian Cup and resurrect. Because I was watching with a leading owner the other day some of the great halcyon days of the Australian Cup and the great replays of Vaux Rogue and so on, and just this sense of whatever happened to this race and why and what can we do to resurrect it.
It'll be interesting to see who is in those All-Star Mile entries as well. And we're going to have either next week or the week after a bit of a yearly wrap-up from the Spring Carnival with Giles Thompson live in the studio. So that'll be an interesting point to put to Giles about that, the entire spring and autumn formats as well, with the mooting of the change of the Sea of All Stakes and maybe tinkering with the Manukato as well. So we'll cover that with Racing Victoria in the next week or so. This Oakbank issue, drama, just seems to continue to bubble along. What's the latest?
Well, they go to the district court today, and the curveball that has re-entered the situation, and this will be broached in the district court of South Australia today, is how and why the Onkaparinga Racing Club has just rejected, without any explanation, new membership applications for the club and even long-held memberships of very, very famous people in connection to the Oakbank Racing Club, the O'Connors, John Glatz. Have had their memberships rejected and new applications have been knocked back. And the theory is that this is to prevent a growing membership base who are pro-jumps from forcing a spilling of the board, an emergency meeting of the board, and therefore a potential overthrowing of the committee, and therefore demanding that Racing SA return to the table to explain and revisit the issue of why it terminated jumps racing in South Australia. So the main mission of the district court action today was to apply that the Onkaparinga Racing Club's books be open and become transparent, and the communication process with Racing SA is laid bare on the table for wider interpretation. But this new thing now, off the back of all these rejected membership applications, over 25 of them, and this is a club with a small base, is to ask, on what basis has the Onkaparinga Racing Club determined that new membership applications have been taken to the committee and then rejected, because it's never been a process applied before. So this is all going to play out in the district court in South Australia today.
Okay, it's just a mess. There's no doubt about it. Matty, yesterday we had Glenn Boss in the studio, who was just phenomenal. The openness and the rawness of what he spoke about on a number of issues, and he announced that he's not quite retired just yet. He's got one more rodeo to ride over in Saudi Arabia. But the most, I suppose, poignant and powerful message that he had was when he almost took his own life. And you wrote a brilliant article following up from that. If you missed what Glenn Boss had to say about the darkest period of his life, here's a snippet of it.
I'd been doing some stupid things in Singapore, self-medicated, alcohol, away from the family, completely off the tracks. Destroying my family life, destroying my wife, destroying my kids, no respect. And I was going down such a black road, Michael. I turned back and I couldn't see the light, and I thought, well, I'll just keep going this way because I can't go back. And I attempted suicide.
You actually attempted?
Yeah, I attempted suicide. And it was only through the sheer determination of my son and, you know, trying to find me and seeing, they knew something was wrong. And the police found me in a hotel completely unresponsive. And, all I remember is waking up in hospital with cords all over me, and they brought me back, you know. And Liam Pryor, to his credit, never left my side for a couple of days, and it was just unbelievable. And I did such a disrespectful thing, not only to myself but my whole family.
It still gives you a shiver listening to it when you replay it today, Matty. And it was a really interesting article that you wrote yesterday, saying that, you know, Glenn Boss's courage to come out publicly and speak. And if there are people who are doing it tough, Lifeline is there for you, Behind the Barriers is there for you, and there are a lot of facilities available open to you from Racing Victoria. So please contact those helplines if you are feeling down. But this is an area where I think racing, it needs to be spoken about more publicly, because there are a lot of people who don't talk about it, and it's a big issue, not just in racing, but in wider society, Matty, as well.
Yeah, exactly. And I did a bit of research because, like you, we're all aware of jockeys we have known who have ended their lives. And whether it's disproportionate to other walks of life or whether there is a spike when it comes to jockeys and their inability to cope with failure, or whether from years of wasting and heavy injury that their mind and body are in a state where they're more likely to get closer to the edge of the cliff than the rest of us. Phil Alderman, Ray Setches, Neil Williams, Gary Palmer, Aaron Kennedy, Rod Smythe, Chris Tuppen, Tommy Arnold, Stathy Katsidis. They're all just local names. And there were the hunt, the national hunt in the UK has been beset by what would seem to be a disproportionate number of participants who have taken their own life. And the most noteworthy one was Liam Treadwell, who rode the 100-1 Aintree Grand Annual winner, Grand National winner called Mon Mome in 2009, who took his life last year. And there's another one, Cody Singer in New Zealand, who was a young jumps jockey. James Banks, Michael Pitt, jumps jockeys in the UK. So whether it is a consequence of the high expectation they have, like with sports people who don't make the transition from the afterlife of their glittering careers to anonymity, loss of status, the after effects of wasting and falling and whatever it is. And there was a good response from Ross to that story that I wrote, who's a very astute responder, who said, well, he's not exactly sure that it is disproportionate, that maybe it is just a societal issue and that we are talking about it because it is our sphere. But it does seem to me that there are a lot of factors in the life of a jockey that make them more vulnerable. And Glenn Boss explained that really starkly to you yesterday.
Yeah, absolutely. And as I said, anyone who does need help or is doing it tough, make sure you avail yourself of those helplines that are out there as well. Matty, I'm looking forward to having a chat to Dennis Napthine, former Premier, and also Tom Riley in the next half hour regarding the report that was put out earlier this week about frameworks and recommendations to improve animal welfare throughout the racing industry in all of Australia, in beginning to end of life for thoroughbreds. It's an interesting read, and the recommendations are interesting as well. There's a lot of questions there. I know you've skimmed through the press release. What's your viewpoint? What's your thoughts on the paper that's been released?
It's really interesting, and Tom has been diligently working at this at TBA for quite some time, and he's been updating me from time to time about where it's heading. So the interesting challenge with it is going to be the major theme of it is that everything has to be done as a national approach, and that's down to traceability standards, national standards beyond horse racing and including responsibility, beginning to end of life transitions and all sorts of things like that. What is interesting is it's a challenge to, well, I would imagine Racing Australia to a degree. Like, if this is to be done at a national level, how is it all collaborated into a national theme and who does it? I spoke to John Massara a couple of days ago. He hadn't read it. I would have probably assumed that the head of Racing Australia, if this is to be done nationally, would have been over the document, would have had his stamp of approval or been part of the process, but that's not the case. So it'd be interesting to hear from Tom and Dennis about, you know, Racing New South Wales has got after that 7:30 report, everyone seemed to get spooked. So Racing Victoria, what, we better come up with a welfare strategy and so on, and they've got that, rehoming and all those sorts of things. Racing New South Wales galloped off and did the same thing. So I'd be curious to know with Tom and Dennis how this major proposal, where they have probably gone to greater depths than any of the others in a consultative sort of way, how is this to be implemented as a national approach when we've got Racing New South Wales and Racing Victoria, and I think the other states, all with their own welfare programs underway as well. So do they get scrapped and does everything get pulled into this approach? Or do we have numerous of these things going on at the same time? And the other thing was the funding of it, the $10 million a year required to implement it. I spoke to all the stakeholders, the jockeys, trainers, owners, and they're all part of the consultative group, and they are supportive. I think the bookies are probably a little bit less enthusiastic about it. So that would be an interesting challenge, just to maybe ask Dennis and Tom about how we convince the bookie fraternity, the corporate bookies, that they should be funding this as well. So, yeah, I think it's a terrific document and it's a great template, but how do we actually achieve this national approach to it?
Yeah, it's hard to get anyone to agree unanimously in racing. So we'll put those questions to both Dennis and Tom in a moment.
Matty, plenty to read about on rsn.net.
I've got a good thing for you in Tassie today.
Oh, yes.
You know I'm in form.
Are you?
Yeah.
Right. What is it?
Barry Campbell's got Alpine Wolf off Mark Anderton. Mark Anderton took the horse when Barry had his time on the sidelines. The mail is, this is the best horse in Tasmania, and is going to prove it today.
I'm going to take you in the
3-year-old cup today. Oh, are you now? What do we got on it? I've got Alpine Wolf. What you can have three to beat it, including the favourite.
I don't need three. Turk Warrior, that's the favourite. We just spoke to Glenn Stevens and he declared it.
Yep.
It is the most exciting horse in Tasmania. So this is good, Matty. We'll go head to head. You're on the Wolf, Alpine Wolf. I'm on the Warrior.
You're half my odds, but we'll call it an even bet and we'll go for a Penfolds 128.
Righty-o.
I'm not going to let you get away with the cheaper one.
We're done. All right, Matty. Good luck.
Righto. Beauty.